Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And you're listening to the Celtics Life podcast.
Welcome inside the Celtics Life podcast. We went from premature confetti to get the broom snatched out of Boston's hands by sloppy play, bad shooting, and a boost from the refs. Now a look to close out Philadelphia 76ers at home this Wednesday night. We got a full slate to talk about, so let's dive right in. I'm Topher Lane, here with Justin Quinn. Justin, you were pretty vocal during the game and on Monday night. How did you feel about everything that went down?
Well, a couple different ways. I'm going to start out with a positive and say that Brett Brown did some impressive work in very unexpected ways to adjust to what has been being thrown at him for the last couple of games. And it worked in a way that I never would have even begun to imagine. This is like literally the most improbable. It's even more improbable than Terry Rozier stepping into Kyrie Irving's shoes. Pretty effectively, TJ McConnell.
Yeah, I was going to say, was this Brett Brown or TJ McConnell being, I don't even know what a comparison is, but he was unreal. TJ McConnell was...
He's barely played all series, and just because, I mean, he was an undrafted pickup, you know, he saved their series for them last night, so it was worth it if for nothing else than that. But really the key to the game, despite how vocal I was about other things, which we can get to in a second, was him picking up Terry Rozier basically all the way down the court and keeping him from being able to run plays right down Philly's throat. And he was at really good offensively speaking, too. Like, he had the game of his life. It was, I think, a career high of 19 points.
Yeah.
It was really, really unexpected. So, kudos to the 76ers.
I was following, you know, I was watching the game on my phone. I was at work, but I was watching the game on my phone. And then I also was refreshing Twitter as often as I could because I couldn't put all my attention to the game. So, I was kind of keeping up with both. And do you think there was a bit of an overreaction with TJ McConnell? I think he did play a great game, and he's part of why the Sixers are still in this series. But also, there were tweets even from Celtics writers writing about how here are all the point guards that went above TJ McConnell in the draft. It's like people who are like, oh, Giannis was picked behind all these people. And it's like, no, there's a bad... No, like TJ McConnell's not someone anybody should have been targeting higher in the draft because he had a good game for... Like 3 years after he went or he committed to the draft.
There's a reason. Yeah, there's a reason why it worked. And it's just because he is such a mediocre player that for him to be the tweak that you make, it let's be honest, it reeks of desperation, but it worked. Mm-hmm. And that is, for the vacuum take, very important. But for the bigger picture, let's be honest, if Brad Stevens can't find a way to neutralize TJ McConnell, I think I will be utterly flabbergasted and disappointed in his coaching for the first time ever. If there's another TJ McConnell game and we go to yet another game, I will actually say Brad had a bad coaching game.
This on game four, you think he had a bad coaching game?
In this particular game, no. Just because they didn't really have enough time to adjust to that on the fly. They tried some stuff, and they kind of got it under control as the game went on. Terry Rozier started to become a little bit more effective in the fourth quarter, but by then the game was already decided by something, you know, we haven't really spoken too much about early on, shifting the momentum, which is great. You know, I think the 76ers had a very good chance of winning the game, regardless of how you feel about this other phantom issue we keep dancing around, which is the officiating. What did you think about that after, you know, since you didn't see the game?
No, I did, and especially in the first half, which is when I was able to really watch the game.
Well, that was one of the worst, yeah.
Exactly. I was really upset. And I'm not someone who typically likes to talk about, you know, the officiating affecting a game, but it seemed very hard to believe that there were 16 fouls for the Celtics in the first half to 8 that the 76ers had. I think that I'm not sure if it was just that there were lack of calls coming for the Celtics or if there were just more calls coming for the Sixers. There were some that I felt that were kind of ridiculous on both sides, you know, but
absence of a 3-second call. That was really the worst, but like things like Simmons falling on Marcus Smart being a foul, just, I don't even understand how that happened. Like, honestly, yeah. Maybe they saw something I didn't, whatever, but collectively speaking, I really try to stay away from tinfoil hat kind of narratives, but at least in the first half, it was very hard for me to believe that the game wasn't being called extraordinarily tight and extraordinarily one-sided. Maybe they made it up for it in the second half. Ultimately, they ended up shooting the same number of free throws, 26 for 26. But by that time, the momentum had pretty much swung in one direction. And, you know, I keep wanting to remind myself that you should never be in a position where officiating should decide a game. But these teams are pretty closely evenly matched in their current state. And it just really sucked for it to be that way. I really much
yeah. Well, that'd be my counter argument for you saying that Brad Stevens had one of his worst coach games. Well, the worst coach game of the series is that this team was rattled by the officiating. This team was really just shaken by, you know, these calls that they felt like they should be getting, or that they had 12 fouls on 4 players by the buzzer sounding for the end of the first half. There were 4 guys with 3 fouls going into halftime. And this team was really shaken by that.
I wasn't saying, by the way, that he had a bad game. What I was saying was, if he does not adjust to this with a day of space between the games, then I will say that he's had a bad game. He actually did a very good job. I think that tech actually was an intentional tech.
Yeah.
I think it was designed to try to get the guys into it in this game and in the future to draw on. So I don't think he had a bad game.
No, and that's what I was saying when I was talking to, you know, the podcast group. I was saying I really hope that he gets angry and gets ejected, because one, that would be kind of, I mean, firstly, it would rally the team, but then also the fans. Like, everyone would be really, I mean, we decide we're going to lose game 4, right? You know, and that'd be like kind of a last ditch effort to be like, you know what, I'm going to stand up to both the league and these refs and fire up my team while I'm at it. And that's, we've seen that in other sports, in baseball, in basketball. Jim Boeheim absolutely did that against Duke when there was that ludicrous foul called when CJ Fair was called for an offensive foul that one time. He did it to try and get the team motivated. But, you know, sometimes coaches just have to make those decisions to do so. And I think Stevens did that just in his own controlled way, where he's not going to get ejected. He's going to get a technical right after Jalen got a technical. And it was like a 6-point swing right there, because it was already a 3-point play. And then then it was the tech on Jalen.
He left him in too.
Yeah, because he wanted to. And then he was just
being mad.
It was great. But so that's what I wanted to see, and I'm really happy I did. But, you know, I would also have liked to have seen him go even harder and actually get ejected, but I understand why Brad Stevens, of all people, would not do that. So, I think that it's important that happened, and I think that was very calculated Brad Stevens in that sense. So I think that he coached well enough, but just that entire thing just shook the team, and they knew that they weren't going to win that game. And you can, like you said, you can find some tinfoil hat scenarios. But
oh yeah, there's people saying that the league is trying to push it for extra games just because of the revenue loss from last season. And, you know, I do think, you know, Keith Smith made a tweet. He's a pretty popular guy out there for you Celtics and Cap Nerds fans. He was tweeting that the league is, shall we say, transparent about who it assigns to certain games, Tony Brothers being a particular name that comes to mind, considering that the last 7 playoff games that Boston has had him officiate, they have lost, which could be a coincidence. It certainly could be a coincidence. But it's really, let's just say, I mean, look, Wick Grausbeck is going to make extra money because of this, because he's going to have another home game out of it. He's not complaining. and the league is not complaining, and when the players get the revenue distribution, it's going to blunt the blow, even if they are complaining now. But for the fans, it's not that we think that there is, at least most of us think that there is an intentional message being sent down the line saying, hey, make sure the Celtics don't win this game. But you'll notice, if you pay attention, that when it's getting close to a sweep of a series, it's not uncommon for a game to suddenly be called very, very, very tightly. And that is through the course of the game what ended up happening. So, you know, you can make that argument that there was never a targeted instance to make the Celtics lose, rather to keep the game tight and close.
Well, on the other side of the Eastern Conference playoffs, you have the Cavs, who completed the sweep against the Raptors, which is a disgusting game four. I mean, just really, I mean, that was just like, if you're a Raptor, that was traumatizing. If you're a Raptors fan, the fact that there is now a meme, because on multiple broadcasts, they've called LeBron LeBrontosaurus. Like, the Raptors have run into a LeBrontosaurus, or LeBronto, because he now owns Toronto. Like, there's all these things that broadcasters are saying now, because he's just destroyed them. Year in and year out in the playoffs.
It was them. They destroyed themselves.
Kind of.
They destroyed themselves.
I mean, game three, they surged back, and they were about to force overtime when LeBron hit an unreal game winner. But, you know, I've been high on Toronto. We should get Luis on here, because
he doesn't like them.
He thinks they need to break up. Like Backstreet Boys style, he thinks they need to just all go their separate ways, start their own solo careers elsewhere.
I think that they should be a good destination for a disgruntled sign and trade. It may not necessarily be Kawhi Leonard, for example, but there's probably going to be somebody out there who's better than a lot of their bench pieces. You know, pick a couple of their bench pieces they like and a couple of ones they want to get rid of and throw in a pick and see if that can get them somebody to kind of like shore up their second unit or maybe even a starting unit.
Carmelo
maybe they
can
get off
Anthony.
Of a Baca. Oh, Lord, no.
The Thunder want to move him. He definitely doesn't work in OKC. Absolutely.
There's a reason for that, but I'm not going to say it because I'm a nice person.
Oh, all right.
I got to do the wash, by the way. I don't know why that's relevant to a podcast, but moving along.
Well.
Talking about wash things, in case it's not incredibly clear.
So, we have the Raptors getting absolutely decimated by LeBron and Cleveland. How is that something the league wouldn't want to step in on? I mean, Cleveland and Golden State have become a really worn-out storyline, where people are saying they don't want to watch a repeat of this finals that's happened three times in a row. So
I don't think the league wants to dictate who plays. I think the league just wants to make sure that as much money can be made as possible.
Well, so then why don't they put more money in, or why don't they make an effort to postpone or lengthen the series between Cleveland and Toronto? I mean, I would say that the Pacers series was really entertaining, and the first time that LeBron has been brought to a game 7 in the first round. So that made its own money. Why not at least force a couple more games? And it's really clear that there wasn't any interference whatsoever in last night's game, Monday night.
No, they didn't need to, did they? Oh, God, now I feel like I'm wearing the tinfoil hat. But Boston played earlier. That's my only answer.
As in, like, from a viewership standpoint, more people are going to watch the second game if it's been a...
Yeah, and you could also make the argument, too, that if you do want more games, that you'd want to see more LeBron games. But, again, control it while you can control it, because they're not rigging the games. They're just making adjustments in the officiating that are going to favor a losing team to be more likely to come out on top by keeping the score close. Mm. I'm going with that for now before we go into, you know, professional wrestling type views of the sport. I don't think we need to go quite that deep down the rabbit hole, but I understand the logic of trying to keep it. I mean, with the TV money situation still hanging over the league in terms of available cap space and lack of cap growth, I understand the desire to make sure that teams aren't faced with yet another season where the cap is actually slightly smaller than anticipated rather than larger.
Okay. Well, so then let's kind of get back to where we're at. We're at least going to a game 5, the Celtics. Do you think we close it out at home?
Yeah. I really don't see, after dealing with that crap, how they aren't going to be super angry. The home crowd is going to be super agitated. The only thing that is going to save Philly tomorrow or Wednesday night is going to be amazing, amazing play from their best players. Not TJ McConnell, no offense. You had a great night, but you aren't going to be the difference in this series. It's just not happening. So if that happens and they do win on our home floor with a hopefully exceptionally motivated Celtics team, then more power to them, and it'll create an even crazier narrative. I don't want to deal with that narrative personally, like most of you, but I do think we close them out.
Do you think that the Shane Larkin injury, this is kind of an aside, do you think the Shane Larkin injury, which I haven't heard much about yet, but do you think that that affects the longevity of this team's run this playoffs? Because, I mean, we're already shy, short on guards.
Yeah, somebody turning their ankle on this roster is going to affect our longevity, really. Though, to be honest, if Kevin Love keeps playing this way and LeBron is just being LeBron and they can kind of keep rolling in Cleveland, assuming we get past Philadelphia, which I think regardless of what happens if Larkin we're going to. I could be wrong, you never know. But
well, no team 7-game era has ever come back from a 3-0 deficit. Never.
Exactly, and this is not the team that's going to do it. They just don't have the – I mean, if they had LeBron on them, I might believe it. But they don't, and they won't. So, I mean, if we look ahead to Cleveland, I would not be surprised if we have a very competitive series based on what I've seen. But yet again, I have been chastised despite shittier than ever surroundings for LeBron in terms of teammates. He is still performing, and really all he needs is just one other person to be able to play at an all-star level next to him for them to be real contenders. And as long as Kevin Love is playing like this, then I don't know. I don't know if we can beat them in the next round. It's really, you know, if we had an injection of talent that we have been told so many times we're not going to get, maybe it might be possible. Not that I expect a Gordon Hayward return, for example, to be the difference maker based on how sloppy and out of shape he's likely to be. But, yeah, at this point, I'm not real convinced that Larkin is going to matter much more than maybe a game or maybe not.
Let's take one more step on the conspiracy and say that the NBA wanted to prolong the series to make it more likely that Gordon Hayward returns. Because
that is a first.
That would be a storyline. That would be
that is like tinfoil top hat material.
Yeah, it is. And that's a good. I like that. I'm suddenly a lot more cool with this scenario of the refs having affected this game in an effort to bring back Gordon Hayward before the Eastern Conference Finals.
Well, you have another point that you like to bring up a lot, and you've convinced me of its legitimacy, which is that the Celtics really are a better team when they haven't had a chance to rest and, mm-hmm. you know, think about the fact that they're playing with 45 or 50% of their actually good players.
Yeah, the Celtics have, they're of, like, you know, the possible scenarios. Their best record comes when they have less rest against their opponent. So, and that's been the case, you know. Game one against the Sixers, came out swinging, took game one. Obviously, you can't do anything with game twos, but, like, even going into the first round, I think that we had played one day after Milwaukee's last game. So there's that. Yeah, we're like 28-7 or something with less rest than our opponents.
Makes no sense, but I'm believing in it because it keeps coming out in the wash. So
something to do with Brad Stevens, because in his career, especially second night of back-to-backs, the Celtics have like the best record in the last 4 years of any team.
It's absolutely true.
Since Brad Stevens has been coaching. And I don't know what that is. I don't know how he does it, how he motivates his team, or how he navigates rest during game one of those back-to-backs, or how he goes about it. I have no idea. But for some reason, he just really gets his team to play on those second nights. But then they go on rest, and they like don't have practice or something one day, and then they come out after like the London break. Great example. Came out after having basically a week off, and then suddenly just we're complete trash for the next two games.
It's true.
And it doesn't make sense. It's like when they have rest, it's like maybe he just runs out of things. I don't know. I don't get it. But for whatever reason, team is better. And that could be the case. You know, Celtics are going to come into the Eastern Conference Finals, assuming we win one of the next three games. Then we're going to have less rest than Cleveland and Jazz. And it's going to be awesome.
Some other stuff motivating them to win this next game, also in the form of Embiid running his mouth.
Yeah, I love so.
What are your thoughts?
So, I was really excited when Terry got in his face, and like when he went for the actual. I guess so. Embiid was trying to take the ball from him, right? And he just kept like kind of pulling it away from him, and then they just kind of started scuffling, and then. Now, it was fun. I looked at Bill Simmons' tweet about it, and he was saying, I don't remember what it was, but I was reading the comments about the tweet about it, and there were people who were like, Rozier took a swing at him, he should have been ejected, and I was like, oh, geez. So, I really like the narrative of now that this is pitting Philly fans against Celtics fans, and that also we have just like this face of this rivalry now, at least for this series. I've becoming to hate Embiid more and more and more and more because he's just a total dick.
I like him off court. I think he's.
I don't.
I do. I think his social media presence is very amusing, but much like Marcus Morris, his shall we say trash talk in scare quotes that you know received the three fingers and then the zero sign.
Dude, that was awesome. I need a gif of that. I need to make that gif. That was phenomenal.
It was the comeback.
Really. Especially for my Sixers fan, my friend who's a Sixers fan. Mm-hmm. He was texting me. He waited till the buzzer. One, because in our group chat, if you trash talk before the final buzzer, your team is going to lose. It's every time that has happened. Because like all my friends in that group chat went to MSU and they trash talked me during the SU MSU game. He trash talked me during game 2 when they were up like 25, and then he started trash talking, and all of a sudden the Celtics come back. Right, seriously, in that group chat, it's like 0-7 if you trash talk before the final buzzer. So he waited and he said, TJ McConnell, baby, bow to your master. And I really wish I'd had the gif of the 3-0 of Morris, just like, because that's what I needed right there. Like, you cannot trash talk when you're down 3-1. You can't.
It's a corollary of talking about no hitters. You don't do it.
Wait. Are you referencing baseball? You hate baseball.
I do.
Wait.
Doesn't mean I'm not completely. I mean, I am aware of certain.
Wait. So what do you mean? If you're trash talking during a no hitter, or if you break up a no hitter?
Like, no, you're not supposed to talk about a no hitter in the middle of a no hitter.
Oh, that's like a jinx. That's different.
Well, it kind of isn't, though, because if you start being, you know, hubristic and enjoying your 25-point lead instead of talking some smack. I mean, I think it's okay for if you're on the court as a player, but as a fan, you know, it's like commenting about how great the traffic is on the highway when you're not even halfway home.
Ooh.
You don't do it.
Okay. I can feel that. All right. I can accept that. So, all right. So then this brings us to our they were both teed up, Rozier and Embiid.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings us to one of our
each other.
I know. I really wish that they had. I wish I've been watching a lot more hockey lately, and I really wish the refs would have just let him kind of go at it for a sec. Because I think Terry would have won that fight. I know he's got like 8 inches on him, Embiid, but I still think Terry would have totally taken that.
I mean, he took out Larkin, and Larkin wasn't even trying to fight him.
Yeah, well, so double text for them brings us to one of our new segments. Who would win? Now, Embiid and Scary Terry. What are our topics, sir? What do you got?
Well, for the listeners who missed the first installation, this is really just a way to settle disputes between Celtics and non-Celtics, or even, you know, potentially in the future, should we ever have an issue. Let's hope not, between Celtics, just a way to settle things off the court And it's purely hypothetical. It's just off the top of our heads. We have not planned out anything but the topics that we've shared with each other. And we're going to plead the case for each of them in a best of five with a tiebreaker. We needed one last time as well. Among all kinds of non-basketball related skill competitions. So,
we should absolutely, with that explanation, we should absolutely do a Ray Allen, Rajon Rondo.
We absolutely should.
Yeah, so look forward to that.
That's going to come soon.
Yeah, that'll be our first off-season installation of who would win. All right, absolutely. But this one. All right, Embiid, Scary Terry.
The competitions. Debate Club. Bowling. MasterChef. Directing a film for Cannes. And trolling.
Yeah.
Tiebreaker figure skating. We'll see if we need it. So, Debate Club.
I would say Embiid, actually.
You think so?
I just think that he would just be very childish about it and frustrate Terry to the point where he would just quit. I think he'd be like a very childish kid.
Yeah, based on the last game, you might be right. It's pretty close. For me, the way I'm looking at it, the way I was looking at it is that Terry tends to back things up with empirical facts, basically his performance.
So like his stats? Yeah. Got it.
While Embiid tends to try to get in people's heads to augment his performance, on-court performance. So in the Big Club, I was initially thinking that the judges would just go with what Terry does versus what Embiid says. However, if you get somebody flustered so they can't even perform in any situation, you might just take them out and, you know, it wasn't really, you know, T.J. McConnell was doing most of the flustering for Terry in this last game, but Embiid definitely got in his head, so I will give him the edge just this one time for the Big Club. Unanimous.
All right. Bowling. You start.
Well, for me, this is pretty simple. Bowling is a dangerous sport, particularly for NBA players. I mean, Philadelphia is no stranger to big men with knee problems destroying themselves and their careers with bowling. So, that said, I'm giving this one to Terry. You got a better argument?
No, I'll take that. Yeah, I'll take Scary Terry every day there. Master Chef.
Whew. Both of them can cook some shit up, man, but I'm only going to be eating what Terry is cooking up because there's a lot of bullshit in what Joel throws on court. So.
What do you think they would make? What do you think their main course would be? Because that's how I decide.
That is hard to say. Oh, boy. Well, in Embiid's case, I think we would get some fusion cuisine, seeing as he is quite a multicultural person, can speak fluently in multiple languages.
I think he'd make like a gumbo.
Yeah, that would be a pretty iconic fusion dish, too. It's got some African influence. It's got some French influence. It's got a bunch of different influences that are actually pretty reflective of him, so that's pretty effective. And yeah. I think I may have just talked myself into an L for Terry here. Because the man makes sandwiches out of sugar and ranch dressing and spaghetti, and I'm not eating that.
I'll take Joel on this one. Yeah, I think that's fair. Directing a film for Cannes.
Now, if it were acting, I think it would easily be Embiid.
Yeah.
However, a director needs to be able to control the pace and the direction, make sure that things really have the punch when they need it, and make sure that everyone's where they need to be. And while Embiid is not horrible at a lot of these things, he's definitely not a master. I think this one easily goes to Terry.
Well, a point guard naturally is a director.
It is. You know? It's the truth.
They fit more of the scenario.
Yep.
Sure. Can I ask how you came up with this topic? you put this one. Can I ask how you got that?
I really don't have an answer other than that I felt that he might have an advantage as a point guard. That's really all I had. I wanted to make sure that, you know, Terry had a fighting chance in this, so.
All right. Trolling. What do you got?
Man, I would have at one time said that it was a very easy, obvious win for Joel Embiid. However, you can now buy a t-shirt of Scary Terry with confetti on it. Mm-hmm. You know, we saw the whole last series how he can troll without even trolling. Like, he would pretend he was not trolling while forcing his opponent in the last issue of Who Would Win, Eric Bledsoe, to basically react almost the entire time and really ultimately just, he didn't just troll in a way that I think was humorous. He trolled in a way that I think really got inside Bledsoe's head and might actually have been the difference in that series.
Yeah.
So given the punctuation of Terry's trolling versus the history, I'm going to argue it was a push.
All right. Yeah, I'll take that. I think we found it. We got. I'll agree with that, and I'll say that the Drew Bledsoe stuff was phenomenal and was absolutely a difference in that series. And as such, I think Terry's got it. Personally.
Okay, so you think it's Terry, and I think it's a push, which makes it just slightly ahead for Terry. If I'm a tie and you're a Terry, so I guess we don't need the figure skating tie, and in this probably not too surprising outcome, we pick Terry Rozier.
Yep. So what does that mean? Does that mean that therefore it should have just been a tech on Embiid? Or just decide that Terry is just a better basketball player?
I mean, if you gave me the option to take either one of them, I would actually pick Terry Rozier, not because I think Terry is a better player, just because I think he's going to be playing basketball in 5 years, and I'm a lot less certain about Joel Embiid.
Bigs with knee problems, not very high. Yep. I've talked about it before. So on to immediately after this kind of went down between Terry and Embiid, you had Jalen and Brad got hit with techs. Do you think, we kind of touched on it earlier, do you think this does motivate the team to play better?
I do. I also think that, you know, Jalen had some comments after the game that he didn't even understand where that came from, and I kept checking to see what it could possibly have been that got him the tech for that. If anybody out there has a better awareness of what it was that got him the tech for that. Like, there was a tech, I think, called against Jason Tatum. Was it a tech or was it a foul? It was a foul for throwing the ball up in the air. That was pretty weak sauce, but, you know, at least I could point to what it was that he did that was ridiculous to get him a foul. In the case of Jalen, like, I was confused. I thought it was Brad getting the tech before Brad got the tech.
Yeah, me too.
Because he was just walking away. He just was his back to the referee. Like, how do you get a technical foul for that? Maybe someone said something, he thought it was Jalen. That's really the only thing I can think of.
Yeah, well, he said he's going to reach out to the league and kind of see if he can get some kind of explanation. And I'd be really interested to see what he finds out. Because it's just like, it seemed pretty ludicrous. To me, at least. Maybe it was just something we missed. But it didn't seem like anybody had a conclusive explanation as to why that had happened. But I mean, we'll see what the league ends up saying. As such, like we said earlier, that was a 5-point swing, I think. 5 or 6-point swing.
I think it was 5-point swing.
Yeah, and that made it, I think, a 4-point game to a 9-point game, which pretty quickly, I wouldn't say put it out of reach, but just that and the combination of the team being rattled and all that just made it a lot harder for anybody to surge some kind of comeback, at least in game 4. With the exception of TJ McConnell. With a comeback.
I would argue not just TJ McConnell. I would also argue Jason Tatum has been the one stabilizing force. Basically, through midway through the Bucks. I mean, he was kind of in the first half of the Bucks series, but basically about halfway through the Bucks season on, he's been amazing. And he was amazing last night, too. It wasn't enough, particularly with him getting – I think he would have had an even bigger game had he not picked up all those fouls early.
Yeah, because I would say this is the only game that wasn't a convincing – you know, he squeaked out 20 points in game 4, which
– made some history, though.
Yeah, he did. First rookie to score 20 plus in 5 consecutive postseason games since Larry Legend, which is a pretty good company.
First to do it in 6 games since Paul Pierce.
Yeah, outside of rookies, period. Just like in general.
Yeah,
it's pretty awesome.
Silver lining there.
Yeah, but so it's, you know, I think that's definitely a silver lining is good there. Good to look towards that. But, I mean, bigger picture. Well, one, I mean, the kid's playing out of his mind. I need to stick with this because I'm a huge Jason Tatum fan. I've talked about it. I've got his jersey. I love him. He's awesome. But now bigger picture. Can he sustain this and help the team through this series and possibly next?
I don't think he's going to have a big game. I think he's going to have his first non-20 point game. Not a bad game necessarily, but I think Jalen is going to have a monster night. I think he's
in part because he's fighting from the tech.
Fighting from the tech, he looked most of the way recovered. You know, he still wasn't quite as fast as he has been in the past since he hurt his hamstring, but he showed a lot less hesitation. He showed a lot more fluidity in guarding. And I think with another day off, as long as he didn't hurt it in some way that we didn't notice in the last game, I think he's poised to have a really big game. I think he's going to be just about recovered from a grade one by then.
Al's been terrific. He's been unreal this entire playoffs. Al Horford's been off the charts.
I mean, realistically, only J.J. Redick has had more playoff experience, comparable, not even more. He's had less, but in the same range, he's got something like 9 or 10 years of playoff experience and 90-something games of playoff experience collectively through the teams he's been on over the years. So if you look at it that way, it's not that surprising. It's really only surprising to a lot of people who have been questioning his value or don't understand what he does. And, you know, now I think just about everybody has had really good views because he's not just been, you know, having good games. He's been saving himself for the playoffs, and it's really showing. I mean, I don't think there's been a game that I can remember. I mean, he only had, I think, like 10 and 10 or something like that in last night's game. But he's had a double-double in just about every game since at least the Bucks series,
if
not earlier.
Last, on Monday night, he had a ton of blocks, and there were a lot of possessions where he was just stifling the Sixers at the rim. And even like sticking with Embiid, like he was making really good plays defensively. And that's something that we know regularly gets overlooked with Al Horford. But it's great to see what he can do. And I'll be really interested to see him on Kevin Love in the next series. Because I think that'd be really valuable. And then Baynes can just hang out in the paint with Tristan Thompson. So, you know, I think it's going to be I'm really, really psyched with how well Al Horford's been playing. And I think he's going to keep it up. I think that he's more likely to keep it up than Tatum is with his play. But I think Tatum will just have a couple bad games and then he'll surge back and get back to his form. Especially because there's not going to be anyone to defend him, you know? Like, at least in this series, there's more defensive-minded players on the Sixers. But against Cleveland? Like, who? Unless you put LeBron on him straight up, which, like, that'd be bad. But then Jalen gets free reign over J.R. Smith, over Kyle Korver. I mean, like, who do you have to stop, like, any of our wings? So, yeah, I mean, there's just not a good option for Cleveland. But, I think Horford right now has just been unreal. And this has been the toughest matchup that he's had this postseason from an offensive standpoint. But even then, he's still making plays. He's still making – he's running point guard some of the time. And he's doing a damn good job doing it.
What are your thoughts on Aaron shooting the corner
three? I dig it. I like the big man who can shoot. And he's been consistent.
I do too. I think it bodes very well for his future, whether he's with the Celtics next season or not. I hope he is, based on what I'm seeing. I think he's going to be... As long as things go well for him...
Yeah. Yeah, we go back to our Chinks conversation.
He could very easily... He could very easily price himself. He may have already priced himself out of a mid-level exception for us. If people really view that three-pointer as being a sustainable, expandable part of his game. However, I do have one criticism, and I think they were running that play for him a little bit too much in game four. I think it started to get a little bit predictable, and they were just perfectly happy to let him shoot it because, you know, he's shooting it, I think, around in the 30s in terms of how often he's hitting.
He airballed one.
But it seems rough. And, you know, that's a thing you can live with. It's a nice wrinkle to keep Embiid out of the paint, but Embiid being in the paint wasn't really the problem last night.
No.
So hopefully they adjust for that.
No. But, I think I've come a long way. You know, you go back to the very beginning of the season when Mark and I had the 2K podcast, and I was talking about how much I hate Aaron Baines. And how I was like, I think he's worthless. I hope he doesn't get any minutes. I hope Yabu gets all the minutes. And then I've just come such a long way to the point where I really like Aaron Baines. I hope he is a part of this team moving forward. But, you know, that's just me. I know that some fans aren't nearly as high on him as you and I are probably. But I like what he's brought to this team, and especially as he's kind of evolved towards kind of the modern big man, even in the course of just this season from October till now. It's pretty cool.
Poor man's Mark Gasol.
Yeah, absolutely. And it came at a cheap cost. And I really, really appreciate that. Yeah. So he's been a big important part of this team, and especially from a defensive standpoint, something that again regularly gets overlooked. He was among the top 10 in defensive plus minus, along with, you know, Marcus Smart and Al Horford. He was up there, and that's part of what makes this team as good as it is defensively. So
man goes up and down like a brick wall. Does. Man does not. Yeah,
he does yesterday, or he does on Monday.
Well, I'm not so sure he did, but there's a horse. It's not alive, and I keep hitting it, so I'm gonna stop.
Is the grass greener? We got two former Celtics. I'll start with my favorite, Amir Johnson. You remember my poem, "Ode to Amir"? That was quality. That was quality. I liked Amir. Big fan. Dude was a poor man. Aaron Baines.
he was.
We made a slight upgrade. Very slow.
Could you just break down what the segment is for?
Yes, is the grass greener? We look at former Celtics in other situations, and we question and take a magnifying glass at whether their situation is better now, or if the grass was in fact greener on the green side with the Celtics. Now, Jared Bayless and Amir Johnson, both on the 76ers. We've been doing a good job with the playoff edition of these. Is the grass greener? Because we looked at, you know, Jason Terry and Tyler Zeller with the Bucks, and now we're looking at Amir and Jared over on the Sixers. Obviously, Amir was the most recent. Jared played sometime with us. Yeah.
Brad's first year.
Yeah.
And then Brad's first year.
Was one of the guys that got moved. So he, Jared is not really seeing any time. He did over the course of the regular season, but he's not really seeing anything. In the playoffs.
Just not effective. Yeah.
And, you know, against a team that is, you know, really tight defensively, he just isn't going to find any. He's too old to find exploits in the defense, I think. Personally. Maybe I'm wrong about that.
What was he? 28, 29 now, I think.
He just seems like he's been in the league for forever, and he just seems like he doesn't quite. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe he needs, like, kind of the Shane Larkin revitalization of his career somewhere else. But it's not with Philly. Yeah, it's not with Philly.
For that.
And I would say that it was much better in Boston than it is in Philly. And I would say that he would probably be seeing more time with the Celtics than he is with the Sixers in this playoff series.
Well, I mean, his regular season playing time is virtually unchanged between 2013-14 Boston
bigger and
2017-18 Philly.
Boston.
He did. He had a much bigger role in Boston. You know, he was scoring 10 points per game. You know, he was scoring 8 points per game for Philly on less minutes. So his production level isn't that different. He has become a more reliable shooter overall, but his 3-point shooting was actually pretty good in Boston, almost 40%, 0.395. Now 0.370. You still got to close out on him, but you're not going to, you know, game plan for him, particularly not in the playoffs. Like, as you said, he played like just 2 minutes of playoff time so far. And you really have to ask the question, though, for a guy of his stature, what is important?
Like, what's important for a Jared Bayless style player?
Exactly. I mean, he's the quintessential journeyman. You know, he's not winning a ring with either club.
You got to have a role. You got to have like a, you know, so like Jamal Crawford is kind of a similar player for me. And his role is just like a microwave player off the bench who is just going to, he's going to come out and he's going to get hot and he's going to score for you. But that's really all that I think that he supplies. I think Bayless needs to find that kind of niche of either he's a sharpshooter or he's a guy that you can insert to soak up minutes and put a scoring punch off the bench. Things like that. And I just don't think he has that quite yet.
Yeah, but he is making more money, more than twice as much as he made with Boston. He made $3 million with Boston.
Jumped from 13, 14. The cap's jumped like $29 million. Like, I mean, I feel like it's just the percentage change. Like, he's actually just a little bit better off.
But you don't retire on percentage of the cap change. You retire on cold, hard cash.
Sure.
You know, so for me, I think it's really hard to judge whether or not Jared has a better situation now. I'm going to go with a better situation in Boston because he was probably set anyway by then. You know, he'd been in the league for about a half decade before that. So I don't know. I think maybe being kind of more important, you know, he's basically a nobody to this Philly team, even when he was playing more, just in the background. And in that particular iteration of the Celtics, which was a pretty bad Celtics team, I think the only guy who was even on that team who's still with us is Smart.
Yeah, it was his rookie year, right?
He was kind of a...
Yeah.
Yep.
That was a tough year. But from that money perspective, Amir made more with the Celtics. He was signed to that, I think it was a $24 million year, 2 years? 12 mil,
yeah.
2 year, well, yeah, 12 mil over each year. And he had a bigger role in Boston. He's now making 11. And he had more time in Boston, and he had more minutes, and he had more points, and he had more rebounds, and he had more assists.
It's pretty clear.
Yeah, yeah, and that, he was great. Stevens really liked him. He played a lot of opening. He didn't play a lot late game, but, you know, he would start games. He would play, you know, some time in the first quarter. He'd play most of the second, and then he'd be pulled and wouldn't see much in late game.
Yeah, he basically got about 5 good minutes out of his knees.
Yeah. But, no, yeah, absolutely, I think grass was greener in Boston for Amir.
Yep, I'm not going to argue against that. I mean, there is something to be said for somebody handing you, you know, north of $10 million to do what he's doing for the 76ers, which is not that much. You know, he's not really contributing too much. He's a great locker room presence, and he can provide a modicum of defense that they don't necessarily have from some of their players. But he's not very important to anything that they do. So, I mean, it's kind of just like a really nice.
Yeah. Is it a one-year deal that he's on?
1 year, 11 million. Yeah.
Well, so that's not the worst. But I don't think he's going to find a great situation coming into next offseason. He'll probably keep taking another pay cut.
He'll get a vet minimum. He might be able to get a little bit more on that based on his ability to continue. You know, he hasn't been very effective this season. He's only shooting 313 from three, where with the Celtics he was shooting over 40%, though. I mean, they were very slow and not very often. So,
well, he had
there's something to be said for staying alive in your career when it's basically over. He would have had to take the vet min to stay with Boston. So, I mean, he made some money. He's still doing what he was doing. He wouldn't have been able to do that with us. There is an argument there that, you know, maybe the grass is greener in Philly, considering what he might want to do versus what he can with Boston. But personally, I agree with you, Boston.
Yeah, cool. Well, check out the links at the top of CelticsLife.com, where we have a huge variety of shirts and hoodies in our store. You can even get tickets to the next game under the heading Game 5. Let's play some must-win basketball. Let's play some elimination basketball. Let's get him out of here.
Indeed. You can also find the pod on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and most podcatcher apps. You can subscribe so you don't ever, ever miss any of our incredibly informative and personally, I think, quite aesthetically enjoyable
frankly,
episodes.
Very fun episodes, yeah. You know?
I think so.
Look forward to that Ray Allen, Rajon Rondo.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be good.
Instant classic, as they say. If you like what you hear, make sure you rate us 5 stars. And if you don't like something, or you just have a suggestion, you know, you have some ideas for some of these segments and people who should be in them, or you never want to hear in them, let us know. Any Celtics Life article, any Twitter comment from the Celtics Life account, with the hashtag CLPOD, CLPOD, let us know. We are always trying to bring you the Celtics coverage the way you want it, the way that you like it.
Awesome. Well, thanks for listening, guys.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.